For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson, and it's Friday. Once again, we'd like to welcome you to the Friday News Feedbag. And as always, we're joined by Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Ribas. James is actually in the studio with me this week. James, hello.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good. And Jorge is not in the studio. He's on the phone, but that's all right.
Yes. Hi, Will.
How are you?
Good.
Another feedback. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
Oh, I am ready.
And I know you guys are both excited because we have a special event happening this week. Last week, we told a story, one of the stories, I believe it was Jorge's, about some research having to do with sparrows and the difference between the music, or rather the song of the bird in the 70s, I believe the late 70s, and the song today. Surprisingly, the author of the study, or maybe not surprisingly, because I know we have a lot of subscribers now, heard the feedback and heard her study was actually the one that won last week. And she got in touch with us, emailed us, and she's here to join us this week and actually sort of clarify what we messed up, certainly. She's a behavioral ecologist at Duke. Elizabeth Derryberry is here to tell us about that story from last week and also be our guest judge. So, Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This is very exciting for all of us. Our first, we'll call you a celebrity judge. Tell us real quickly just about the research and the story.
Okay, yes. Well, last week, I think y'all did a great job of describing it, and I really liked your discussion about the cultural implications. So basically, the study was to look at whether male and female birds discriminate between old-sounding songs and new-sounding songs. And I took recordings from 1979 that were made by Louise Baptista and went back to the same population, recorded the birds in 2003. And then in 2005, I played 10 historical songs and 10 current songs to 20 males in the field and then 10 females in the lab. And I basically, with males, was looking to see whether the historical and current signals were equally effective as aggressive signals. So male white-crowned sparrows defend a little territory. They sing a song to say, keep off my territory. And then I acted like an intruder by playing the songs on their territory. And I found that males were much more aggressive when I played current songs on their territory than when I played historical songs.
Do you think that might have been because they just thought that you were old since you were playing such old music and you wouldn't be as much of a threat?
Yeah, I think that's how I interpreted it. It's interesting because they responded, which shows that they didn't just think it sounded messed up. You know, they knew it was their own species, but clearly it wasn't as threatening because they didn't respond as strongly.
Okay, so the new song had more of an effect.
Yes,
okay.
The new song had more of an effect.
And it's changed over time.
Yes.
I mean, it's quite different. You can still tell that it's the same song or whatever you want to call it. And in fact, you sent us a few samples of the historical tune and then the newer one. And actually, we can play those for us right now. Tell us, the first one was from what year?
1979.
Okay, here's the 1979 version for our listeners. Okay, so that's a nice sounding little sparrow tune. Is that there? That's still the same sort of melody or whatever you'd call it as they are doing today?
Yes, same song type.
Okay, and then the newer one is from when?
2003.
2003, here it is. All right, so, I mean, definitely a difference there, James. Did you hear it?
Yeah, I like that one better.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the differences there.
Well, what's really interesting is that the songs have the same song type. So that means they have the same notes in the same order. But the 2003 cover of the old song basically sounds slower and is lower in pitch. So they're pretty subtle differences, but you can hear them if you're listening closely.
Okay.
Would this fall under like a remake of the original song or like a new cover version of the older song, I guess?
I would say it's like a cover of the older song.
It's a mashup notion.
It's got the same words, but they're doing it with a little bit of a different beat to it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Which one do you like better?
I like the old one better, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I mean, the originals are always better than the covers, or the remakes, I guess.
Oh, man, I like those slow jams. You know me, though. That's just how I roll.
All right, well, guys, you ready to jump into this week's stories?
Yeah,
you look like you have
I know, I just want to say one. The second song, the more recent one, did make me a little bit more angry.
He's getting aggressive. I wish he were on the phone and not here in person. All right, so a lot of stories to get through this week. And any new subscribers to the podcast, here's how it works. James will give us three stories. Jorge will give us three stories as well. And Elizabeth is here as our guest judge. She will decide on her favorite story of the week. It doesn't matter what her decision is based on, just whatever seems to be the most interesting to her. So, Elizabeth, you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Jorge, you ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's get into the feedback. James, you want to kick it off this week?
Sure, I'll kick it off. All right. So my first story was published in the American Dental Association Journal, and they're using high-tech dental lasers now to prepare and clean root canals out, I guess, before they get in there and do their thing. And the thing that I liked about this story more than anything is that they're using lasers, and I don't know why, but that's just cool that they're using lasers.
Lasers are always cool.
Yeah, so last week I was hoping for a Star Wars thing with eye stuff, and this week I'm kind of hoping that maybe Dennis will start dressing up like Darth Vader or Boba Fett and working on teeth.
Wait a minute, the lasers, I guess, you know, they do it on their eyes. I guess it would make sense to do it on your teeth.
Yeah, I mean, lasers are, I think they're everywhere now. And
they are everywhere.
Well, hopefully it makes the dental experience less painful. That's what I'd like.
Yeah, definitely.
Although I am imagining sitting down in that chair and, like, the dentist pulling down this huge laser gun in front of you and just be like, all right, just open your mouth real quick.
Yeah, I wonder if it looks like a stormtrooper gun.
Right.
All right, James, thanks very much. Let's take it over to Jorge for his first story of the week.
Okay, I always think it's kind of fascinating when we can like learn how to behave better through animals. But these new findings published in the Journal of Animal Cognition found that certain kinds of primates, particularly these they studied here called white-faced saki monkeys in Venezuela, didn't just pick their food based on how close it was to them, and they would risk traveling further, so putting themselves out to predators and expending more energy, if it meant that the trees that they were reaching, more of their group could eat from these trees. So, for example, if there was a fruit tree near them but wasn't as productive as one that was further away, they would go to the further ones to make sure that everyone could eat. And I just think that's interesting to us, because I think if you put, like, an apple close to me and then two apples further away, but it meant that, like, James could eat that other apple, I would probably just pick the one that was closest to me.
You know what else? That's kind of like they're, like, driving further for a better buffet.
Right. Wouldn't you just pick the one that's closer?
No. Personally, I don't know, man. I think it depends on what was on the buffet.
That's true.
It's really about survival of the species.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then they're learning that it's something that's closer might not necessarily benefit everybody, so they're willing to put themselves out there and risk.
It's really cool because there aren't a lot of studies that show altruism, so that's sort of an altruistic behavior.
Right.
And to show that sort of level of social coordination is always really interesting.
Right, and it kind of goes in hand with that other study, and not to go off track here, but another recent study I read that chimpanzees don't exhibit spite, so I guess we're the only primates that do exhibit spite.
Well, I think that really is, why can't humans just be more like monkeys? I mean, not everything, because there's lots of things that monkeys and primates do that we definitely should not be doing, but, man,
infanticide.
You know, yeah, just a little bit. Can't we just get go back just a couple steps to a more peaceful time?
Elizabeth, I know you focus on birds, right?
Yes.
But in your research and studies and learning, have you, I'm sure monkeys are something that all behavioral ecologists maybe get into a little bit?
Yes. I mean, I think that, you know, birds are a really good model for understanding how humans learn language, but, you know, obviously social primates have it down when it comes to social learning behaviors.
Well, let's take it back over to James for his second story of the week.
Okay, my second story is out of the University of Havana, and there's this polymer that's pretty common in nature, particularly in lobster shells as well. It's called chitin, and it shows a good healing and biostimulant properties. So what these people at the University of Havana have started doing is basically extracting that polymer and coating their like surgical threads and lint, which they put antibiotics into, as a way to kind of promote healing within the things that they're using in people's bodies. And I think it's pretty cool because it's sort of like it's recycling to the max. There's all this waste that's going to be there anyway, so why not use it to heal people?
Yeah, sounds like a great idea.
And the chitin is where? What else is chitin? Is chitin like all over the place?
Yeah, it's in all sorts of things within nature. You can find it in like arthropods and insects. So it's, they say that only cellulose is more abundant than chitin in nature. So
is it in like your pillow?
I don't know.
It's a pretty hard material, so I don't think you'd want it in your pillow.
Oh. Actually, I think our fingernails, are they chitin?
I don't know. They might be.
I don't know if they are or not.
I don't
know. Elizabeth, any thoughts? Do you work with chitin at all, I guess, with birds?
I don't work with chitin. I know that it's a very strong material and has a lot of great properties, so it's great that they can make use of it.
The other thing that it does, it's a biostimulant, so they use it in agriculture. They coated tomato seeds with it, and the tomato seeds actually grew better as a result of having this stuff on there as well. So yeah. I think the moral is, if you eat lobster, eat the whole thing. Eat the shell.
Because, don't waste the shell.
Yeah, because you'll heal and you'll grow more.
I mean, who cares if you cut your throat while you're eating?
Exactly.
If you do... it's healing already, even before you do it.
I'm really hoping the researcher of that story is not listening. All right, sounds good. Let's take it back over to Jorge for his next story.
Okay, this story has to do with mushrooms. And University of Warwick researchers are coordinating an effort to sequence the genome of a mushroom called Agaricus bisporus. And what they want to do is sequence it because the mushroom is one of the most important mushrooms. It's a highly efficient secondary decomposer of plant material, and it breaks down material that's too tough for other bacteria or fungi to break down. And they're hoping that this particular mushroom can help assist in the creation of biofuels and also support, you know, manage global carbon emissions and help remove heavy metals from contaminated soils. And one of the things that they're saying is that the species of mushroom can accumulate toxic metals in soils at a higher level than anything else. And planting stuff like this in, you know, brownfield sites and other areas where the soil is so contaminated that you can't really use it anymore would be something that they're looking at.
Wow, this is quite a task load for the little mushroom.
It is, you know, not just for your salads, I guess.
Yep.
I think mushrooms are delicious.
They are. Although I don't know if you'd want one that is accumulating toxic metals within itself, but...
Maybe. Well, we all eat oysters.
True.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. I don't know.
Not all of us.
I don't know if oysters with a side of mercury is...
Not anymore.
Right.
All right, let's take it back to James for his third and final story of the week.
All right, my third and final story is out of the University of Chicago Medical Center, and they're looking into how herpes can help angioplasty operations remain successful. And I didn't know this, but apparently herpes has some pretty good healing qualities. They know that it's efficient against malignant tumors of the central nervous system and in the liver, and it blocks certain types of cell death and I guess proliferates surviving cells. And so they have some rabbits there that some have herpes and some don't, and so they did this test. They underwent angioplasty, and the ones that did not have herpes had this, like, I guess it's like scar tissue that builds up, and eventually I guess it just with their arteries were blocked again. But the ones that did have herpes, they had minimal changes to the arteries.
Oh, seems like there's some trade-offs there.
Yeah, I know.
No comment.
Yeah. It doesn't say what, I mean, I know there's different types of herpes,
right.
But it doesn't say, we don't even need to get into it, but that's an interesting story.
Well, yeah, no, you know what, it's genetic, you know, I don't think it's like normal. Like
it's a different strain.
Yeah, it's genetically modified, so. Yeah.
Like that cold sore on your face there. Yeah. Is.
I'm just the picture of these little bunnies.
I know.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's
you know, rabbits have a pretty, I don't know. They already have a reputation, so giving them herpes.
Yeah, they do.
Getting around, yeah.
Thanks, James. Jorge, let's take it back to you for your third and final story of the week.
Okay, a professor of aeronautics by the name of Deva Newman at MIT is constructing a new kind of spacesuit. So finally, to try to get rid of those bulky, pressurized suits that astronauts have been wearing for, you know, 40 years, she's inventing or working on a sleek suit that's kind of, in her description, more Spider-Man, less John Glenn. So she calls it a biosuit. It's like a spandex and nylon biosuit that kind of covers the astronauts in more layers. And the suits, what I learned is that these old spacesuits can weigh about 300 pounds, so it really limits the mobility of these astronauts. And according to the study, like 80% of the energy that astronauts exert is just to get the suits to move around. So allowing these guys to wear, you know, really like thin and movable suits, and really just kind of usher in that Star Trek era that we've all been hoping for, I guess.
You know, the NHL just changed their uniforms to have these sleek ones. So maybe there's like a
sleek is all in. Right?
Yeah, that's the trend.
I mean, the thing is, like, you know, for some astronauts that may not be in the best of shape, you know, they can't hide in those bulky suits anymore. You know, you gotta look good if you're rocking the nylon bio suit.
Well, you know, the first thing, and I know this isn't going to happen, and this isn't right, but the first thing that popped into my head when you said that is I pictured like a bunch of astronauts doing morning calisthenics out on like the surface
of
the moon.
You know what? Funny you should say that, James. The suit actually was developed based on ideas from the 1960s and 70s by a man named Paul Webb, who first came up with the concept of a space activity suit. So maybe, you know, I'm picturing like those old cheesy like posters or whatever where you would see like astronauts on like this fake moon spot like doing what you're saying, calisthenics.
Nice. Do they is there any mention of capes?
No, but you know what, I'm sure that you could add a cape pretty easily, I imagine.
A cape is really for flying, isn't it?
Yeah, but you could float around in space with a cape.
Yeah. Right, yeah, totally. I mean, you can. There's no grass, so they could kind of fly.
Well, the question is we've gotten so much from space technology and like everyday things like cell phones, whether we're going to have a whole new clothing line come out of this.
Eventually, I think we'll all be wearing kind of those like bio suits.
I don't know, though. You know, I don't know. I know what you're saying about how, like, all this technology filters its way into mainstream society, but how much has, like, NASA fashion made its way into current?
That's true, though. I wonder if those shirts, do you remember those old shirts with the, you put your hands on it and changes color based on temperature? You know, I wonder if that came out of NASA.
Yeah.
Right.
You
know?
Might have. All right. Well, great stories, guys. That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, James has given us his three stories from Jorge, and now we go into the very difficult process of the judging round, and Elizabeth is here to help us do that. Let me review real quick, Elizabeth, just so hopefully you've been taking notes.
Yes.
Okay. So the three that we heard from Jorge, monkeys that are not going for the easiest pickings. Also, he told us about mushrooms that could combat carbon and find better biofuels and safer soils. And then finally, a giant leap for space fashion, MIT designing sleeker, skin-tight spacesuits. Then from James, we have the lasers being used by dentists. We also heard about a study from the University of Havana or something they're doing with lobster waste and chitin and the healing powers of chitin. And finally, from James, we heard from the University of Chicago how herpes can actually be helpful in some rather interesting ways. And as always, we want to remind people that it's a competition, and so Elizabeth will choose her favorite story. And James, what's the score right now?
It's 7-4, and Jorge is winning.
Okay, so Jorge's stories have been chosen 7 times, James 4 times. Elizabeth, we'll turn it over to you, and I'm interested to see what your choice is going to be.
Well, I think I've narrowed it down to 3 types of stories, at least. So let me work through this. So I think the first story, Jorge's first monkey story, was a plant. So obviously with the behavioral component, I'm really intrigued by it. And that would be the one I think I would go read first if I was going to go read an article from this.
You think he planted it to sway? To
yes,
sway?
Yes. Get more points.
I think you're giving me more credit for sneakiness than I'm capable of. But all right, that's cool.
So I think that one is probably my personal, you know, what I'll probably go read next. But I like the two stories about the chitin and also the mushroom, because I really like stories about using animal products, you know, what I'm calling animal patents for, you know, for humans, making use of that. And I think it's a really good idea to turn to nature for those sorts of ideas, like, you know, using spider web as, you know, very strong tensile material. So I like those kind of stories, but I'm going to have a surprise. I remember when I was listening last week that you said that guests often choose the story reveals something about themselves.
Yes.
I think I'm going to go for the MIT story, and I'm going to go for it because my brother just graduated from the aeronautics department at MIT.
All right, interesting. So,
and he helped design a space elevator. He's working on one of those projects for NASA. So I really know the amount of work that goes into that into that department at MIT and how good it is. So I want to support that.
Just to clear the air, I don't know Elizabeth's brother, and that I didn't know that he worked at MIT.
Yeah, sure.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What do you all talk about when you get together for dinner?
My family?
Yeah, you got, like, is everyone, like...
Bunch of brainiacs.
Yeah.
We talk about all sorts of things. My mom's an artist and my dad's a minister, so we...
Oh, wow.
We have a lot of fodder for conversation.
I'll bet it's interesting.
Well, that's exciting news for Jorge. I'm sure that his story has been chosen again, so that puts him up 8-4 over James.
I know, yeah. I'm sorry, James. I did like the lobster story a lot. So.
That's cool. No, that's fair. And Jorge, if I may say something to you.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
As always, James, very, very kind at the end of these tough competitions.
Gracious.
Yeah, very gracious. Well, Elizabeth, it's been a pleasure having you on, and hopefully you can join us again sometime as a guest judge.
I would love to join you again. This was a lot of fun.
And Elizabeth, again, is a behavioral ecologist at Duke. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
James, Jorge.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Have a great week, and join us next Friday, of course, for the Friday News Feedback for Discovery News. I'm Will Johnson.